I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. And Sports Radio 66.
All right, folks, 7:21 here on this Monday evening. We're just getting warmed up. It's J.J. Janczyk-Stremski right here on The Fan, and hopefully we get some positive news with the idea that Major League Baseball and the Players Association, hopefully, are moving closer and closer to a deal. So to break it all down, a guy knows a thing or two about being in the Players Association. One of my all-time favorites. I loved doing radio with them back in the day, even though it feels like it was another lifetime ago. And the current outstanding analyst for the Texas Rangers on their outstanding broadcast. Let's welcome in my good buddy, CJ Nikowski. CJ, what's happening, my man? How you hanging in? You staying safe?
I'm hanging in, JJ. Things are pretty good here down in Atlanta. No real complaints. I'm out a little bit from the city. So from a COVID standpoint, it hasn't been too bad. I mean, we're managing and everything else that's going on. So it's been quiet, too quiet, because there's no baseball. But we're doing well, man. How about you?
Hanging in there, CJ, doing the best we can. And take us through, first off here, being a part of the Players Association and, you know, the sort of updates you would get from time to time, you know, what it's like being a part of one of the most powerful unions in America. CJ, obviously, you know, 94 happens. 2002, it felt like baseball was on the brink. Do you remember your individual dealings from time to time being a part of the MLBPA?
Absolutely. So, you know, I was drafted in 94, so it was an awkward experience to play in the minor leagues, be a first-round pick for a team, and then the season get canceled before that first half of the year was even over. And then for it to trickle over into 95 and to go into spring training and be asked to cross a picket line. I mean, it was only an experience for a couple of different teams. Most teams hired replacement players. But the Reds and a couple of others did not. And so we were put in a really awkward position. I mean, you can imagine the first time you bring your first-round pick to camp and you ask him to cross the picket line. And if he doesn't, he's got to get out of camp and get kicked out, which is exactly what happened. It was a wild experience, man. And it was a time to learn a lot about the issues at the time, how the union worked, why the union was so strong. Really kind of laid the groundwork. I wasn't a member, technically, of that union yet. But you learned a ton in the process, and they did a really good job of educating guys. And you always learned about the strength, like you talked about, of that union. And then again in 2002, it came up. And I was in a weird spot because I had just gotten called up, and I'm trying to get my career back on track. And now I got to be ready to go on strike potentially within a week or two of getting back to the big leagues. And we were absolutely ready to walk back out again. So I would say that the communications are really good. You're always going to get some guys that have some different opinions, and those voices always should be heard. But generally, it's really strong, and it's always about the future, too. I think that's the other thing that gets ingrained in you when you're a player and in those spots that I was in. The guys that were speaking were stars that had made money, and they were going to continue to make money, but they were trying to protect for the future. That was always a big part of it. But it was fascinating to be a part of, and as you mentioned, just really strong. And I think, you know, as an owner, you always probably look for opportunities to potentially break that union. But they are the envy of every other union in sports because of how strong they are.
CJ, before we get to Jeff Passan's story, I haven't talked to you about this, so I'm curious to get your take. Before Monday, if you had to put a percentage of seeing baseball in 2020, what would that percentage be from you before today and now with this latest report? Has it changed at all?
It's always been high for me, you know, being an optimist and wanting to get baseball back. And listen, I'm directly affected by whether or not we actually play games this year as far as the work that I do for the Rangers, and so there was a lot of hope in there as well. But that number was in, you know, in the high 80s and maybe even the 90s for me. I just felt like it's always going to happen because, I, you know, we haven't had a work stoppage since 1994, and we just talked about going into the 95 season. We've always found a way to get it done. Now, I know there was, you know, some issues going on, the union not happy, the players not happy with the last couple of rounds of bargaining, and could that, you know, finally come to a head and be a problem even in this situation? But I remain optimistic, and I feel really strong that we will see baseball again. I know there's some back and forth, and, you know, it's easy to get discouraged. You can see some players saying some things that maybe would get you discouraged, but I'll always believe there's going to be a season until someone tells us otherwise.
And, CJ, when it comes to the proposals that came out, when the Players Association and the owners agreed to prorated salaries back in March, were you of the belief that if that's something they agreed to back in March, the players should hold firm and that should be something they get moving forward? I mean, to me, it seemed like a no-brainer. I know a lot of people want to vilify the players. They're front and center. They're making crazy, crazy money, and I get it. People are unemployed. People are furloughed. People are in very tough spots right now. But like a guy like Gerrit Cole and Mike Trout should not go, in my opinion, from making $35 million a year to all of a sudden making like $5 million a year. I, for one, don't think that's right. So initially, did you like buy the idea that the players, you know, should be making these sort of cuts within their salary?
Well, they were really heavy. And obviously, they were really heavy on the guys that were making the most money. And probably that thought of, okay, well, it's not going to really affect them if they're in the middle of a $300 or $400 million extension, and so they wouldn't mind taking on some of the pain. But it always becomes about principle in the union when you're talking about those bigger players. I was a little surprised at how aggressive they came out. There is some language in that contract that did allow for revisiting the economic situation based on what was going on, and what was going on and where we are right now is the idea of games without fans. And what does that do to revenue? Like that, the way that agreement was written, that there should have been at least an opening there for renegotiation, and that's where the owners have taken this, right? First offer came in at prorated numbers, you know, 82 games, but prorated salaries and going through those cuts that you were just talking about. The players are really digging in, but the language in that agreement, it makes sense. It was definitely open for that to be a possibility. I know there was real frustration. When you think about this, even with an 82-game season, if they were paid at their full rate, they still lost combined $2 billion in wages.
Like
the combined payroll is just over $4 billion. I've seen some different numbers, but I think right around 4-1 is probably a safe place to kind of guess, or even $4 million to make it even. And the idea that a half a season means $2 billion and what those guys thought they were going to make collectively completely disappears, and then to ask them to take cuts of, as the union phrased it, another $800 million on top of it, it was just too much for them, and that's why they've continued to dig in here.
We got our buddy, the former big leaguer, CJ Nikowski. He's killing it right now doing the telecast for the Texas Rangers. And CJ, you see the report of 50 games. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't see this any way in the world we're looking at a 50-game season. Like, don't you get the sense? Players Association comes out 100-plus. Baseball Now is telling you probably anywhere from 50 to 60. Doesn't this have all the makings of a 70 to an 80-game compromise?
I hope so. It's interesting, but the problem is, will the owners go to, say, 80 games or 82 like they originally proposed the first time around if they can get there, but do it at the full rate? Right? That's been the big question. I was really encouraged that at least the players were considering the idea of putting some money off a little bit, right? Deferring that money for a couple of years. That was only $100 million. I think that number would have to go up to make it work for the owners, and even if you spread it out over a couple of years, I think we could get there with, say, three or four, maybe even $500 million that ends up getting deferred. It's a smart play for the players. I know it's not a lot of interest, but I think everybody wants the Bobby Bonilla deal if you can get it, right? So the idea of putting some of that money away and you know, kind of spacing it out a little bit more might work for everybody, but there has to be contingencies in there. The problem is, to me, one of the biggest issues is that when Governor Abbott in Texas came out and said, hey, you can have games right now in an open-air stadium with 25% capacity. Well, for the Rangers and for the Astros, that means 10,000 fans right now. I don't know if they're going to do it, but he said you can. And so when you hear that, you expect that number to go up over time. And, you know, guarantees, we certainly could go in the other direction. Nobody wants to see it. But all of a sudden now, that's a new wrinkle in this whole thing. As you're sitting there negotiate, and owners are saying, listen, we need to cut your salary because there's no fans. And then one of the governors comes out and says, no, you can have fans. You can have 25% fans. And so how do you construct a deal knowing that potentially if this thing continues to go in the right direction for all of us, that we're looking at 50% or 75% or maybe, you know, by September 1st. I know it sounds like a long stretch, but what if they're at 100%? Well, then they don't want to have to defer any money. They don't want to take any pay cuts. And so that case becomes a little bit harder to make, I think, for owners, knowing there's the possibility, at least in one state, and probably more to follow here pretty soon, that you can have games with fans.
Complicated stuff. Now, as far as the rule changes, CJ, one with the universal DH I've been screaming about for years, and I get it.
Yeah.
The element of the double switch, the idea of, you know, a good hitting pitcher, whether it's DeGrom here in New York or Madison Bumgarner with the Giants, but I'd rather see a hitter getting it back, yeah, you know, four times through a game. Your take on a universal DH, you a fan?
I've been there with you for a while, especially now that I don't have to pitch anymore. I'm all about it.
Oh, of course. That goes without saying. You don't want to be picking up a bat. Forget it.
Nope. No one to pick up a bat, but I didn't want to face DHs and every team that I faced either. But, you know, listen, we love seeing Bartolo Colon hit that big home run. Like you said, we love when Mad Bum squares up Clayton Kershaw. It's just great television. But the reality is those are so few and far between. The numbers, I mean, obviously you know they're going to lean heavily toward the DH, but they're really significant if you dig in and look at the kind of offensive production, which we need. We need more balls put in play. You know, pitchers strike out, I think it's like 45 to 50% of the time. It's no good, man. It's not good for our game. It's not fun. And I want to see starters stay in there a little bit longer. The big one has always been, for me, though, competitive balance. I go back to Brian McCann after he, when he became a free agent, signed with the Yankees, you know, way back when. It seems like a long time ago now. But there were teams that couldn't get in on him in 5 years, nationally teams, because they knew they needed DH at bats to be able to give him over time. And they weren't going to make a 5-year commitment knowing that they didn't have DH at bats available. I think you can look at a lot of players like that. That would, and a lot of teams that say, man, we can't go to that guy because we don't have the DH bats at bats to give him. So I think that's a big part of it as well, some competitive balance. And I hope it sticks. I think it will stick over the long term. It's just a matter of time.
And CJ, that's got to be something that from a players union standpoint, they're going to love, because the DH is going to be a high paying job. So you mentioned the idea of, you know, you're a free agent, you're a guy who plays a position like McCann behind the plate, or maybe you're an outfielder whose body is betraying you. You at least have teams in the American and the National League that can now offer you a contract.
Yeah, or you might just think of defense. I mean, that's the reality, right? There are some guys that can flat-out hit that maybe you're not the great defenders. And I'm not saying that he's such a terrible defender. He's not a great one. But Jose Martinez is a good example. I have a guy who I think is a really good hitter. The Cardinals just had a hard time finding out where they could put him in the field, and so they traded him to the Rays this offseason. I don't think they do that if they have DH at-bats to be able to give him. And so you run into those kind of jams as well, and they're probably regretting it now, knowing that they could have had him as a DH. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe just the way the roster worked out. But those are the kind of things that happen. I will say that it's not necessarily going to be like it was in the 2000s where we had all of these really great DHs and everyone's making $15 million. I do think that you'll see, we've already seen it with teams, that they'll go to the rotating positions for that and give, you know, we're going to give a guy a day off, but not really a day off. He's still going to get his four at-bats. I just don't want him standing out there for 3 hours or an hour and a half on the defensive side to give his legs a break. Or we want to play platoon today, so we're going to put our better defender here and let this guy go DH. So I think it will be – some teams will go out and try to get that guy that takes, you know, 90% of the DH at-bats. But I think you'll also see a lot of teams that will rotate it, maybe use 3, 4, or 5 guys to fill that up.
CJ, I got to be honest. When baseball announced in early February they were thinking about expanding the postseason, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I said they have this great format. You know, the wild card game is so much fun. I like the idea of it mattering, the idea of getting into the postseason. But I have to admit, I'm kind of doing an about face on it, because if we're playing a shortened year, obviously there's a revenue question of getting more TV dollars and broadcast rights and all that stuff. But because it's a shortened season, I want to have more teams getting a chance to be a part of the tournament. It's not your same marathon of 162 games, but you know this. Once you go down a direction of expanding the postseason, you and I both know they're not going to revert on that a year from now, 2 years from now. So your take, Do you have a strong feeling on the idea of expansion for postseason? You like it? You hate it? You're somewhere in between.
Well, I definitely like it for the short term, and I'm sure it'll be fine. Right? Remember when we had, before we had two wild cards, and we would get some of these game 163s, right? Or we'd get, the season goes down to the last day of the season. Also, like 3 or 4 years ago, we had that unbelievable end of the season with the Braves and the Orioles and the Yankees and all this fun stuff that was happening. And then we said, you know what? We're going to go to two wild cards. And I'm like, well, you know what? It's not organic. It's not going to feel the same. Well, that turned out not to be true. We love the wild card game. And you think about the Washington Nationals last year and how close they came to losing that wild card game. They almost lost that game. It was the big hit to right field that kind of took the weird bounce, and Trent Grisham played it wrong, and the Nationals scored three runs in the eighth inning and went on to win that game, and then they won the whole thing. And we see wild card teams win the World Series more often than we probably think that we're going to. So the idea of kind of manufacturing a bigger postseason, I think, will be well received. I know sometimes the purists in us, we want to see it happen. We want to see, you know, if you're like a small Hall of Fame guy, you might like small postseason. But this could be potentially a minimum of 10 more games, but up to 22 more postseason games that we would get out of this. And you're right, it is huge money, and that's a way to make up for some of this revenue, and it becomes really important for owners. But I think we get a taste of it. I think we get a taste of the universal DH, and there's a really good chance that both of those things stick.
CJ, before we get you out of here, we have not had a baseball game played since Nationals and Astros in the regular season or in the postseason, going back to game 7 of the World Series. But I've been diving into a bunch of these old games. I'm kind of over it at this point. Like when we first went into lockdown, you know, it was cool sitting down and watching a couple of these. Now I'm like, all right, I need something live. I need something to really distract me. But as a guy who lived it, right, a guy who played in the big leagues, is there one moment that maybe you've shown the kids, maybe shown the wife, or maybe it's just you and some alone time that you've gone back and rewatched? Is there one game?
Well, if I, you know, my kids, I get no respect in my own house. It's
typical.
Kind of how it goes.
Always.
So every once in a while. But you know what? With The Last Dance, of course, they had a great documentary on Michael Jordan. I was fortunate. I mentioned I told you I was drafted in 94, and I went straight to the Southern League, which was Double A out of St. John's. And so I was in the same league with Jordan. And so I got to face him a few times, and I punched him out. So I did break that video out.
How about that, man? Everybody's in Last Dance mode. And then I'm sure if the kids weren't impressed by that, CJ, they're never going to be impressed.
I mean, that's all I got. I mean, if I think about it, and you know, 19 years later, I kept playing baseball professionally. But that was definitely one of the fun ones. As a 22-year-old kid who was, like I said, probably 2 months out of pitching for St. John's, and all of a sudden I'm pitching against Michael Jordan, was still probably one of the coolest moments of my career. So yeah,
CJ, with the environments and the atmosphere for those Jordan games, like playing at Yankees, it seemed like it was off the charts when he was playing baseball.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had not played at Yankee Stadium yet to that point, but it's interesting too when you go back and watch. I think we're so much, every generation will become more and more rabid about our sports. So watching some of those highlights and watching going back to that game, it was interesting to see that it wasn't completely like sold out and jam packed. Great crowds, no doubt, and great crowds often compared to what you're going to get in Double A back in 1994. But it wasn't like every single seat was filled, which is cool because you remember they showed in the documentary when he hit the home run, and I actually started that game. I didn't let up the home run.
Wow.
But I started the game in which he gave up that home run. And I was watching those highlights, I'm like, wow, there's still kind of some empty seats there. I pitched terrible. I think I walked him twice that game. But he ended up hitting his third and his last home run of his minor league career that night. And I gave you a quick one real quick because I think your audience will appreciate it. Being a New York guy, I had three friends drive down to Birmingham, Alabama to watch me pitch that game. And didn't go well, but they had a really good time, and it was a cool experience for them and a bunch of 22-year-old buddies. Actually, I was 21 at the time, I think. And but anyway, really good time. And I got them. I tried to get them three autographed baseballs, but I could only get one. So I had Jordan. Jordan signed one baseball for me, and I gave it to them. And they had a fight over it, the 15-hour ride home, to figure out who was going to actually get it. They acted like they had it taken care of before they got in the car. But my one buddy said one other one just would not shut up about it. He finally just gave it to him. Which
that's a tough argument right there. I mean, there are only a couple ways to sell that, right? CJ, maybe a game of darts, maybe around the golf. That's tough to do.
I think they did it in the parking lot with some, I don't know if they were shooting it out or whatever they did. But the one guy won it fair and square, and then he said he couldn't take it anymore. And, 15 hours is a long time to be in a car with somebody, you know, telling you didn't win something fair and square, and he gave it up. And I guarantee he still regrets it.
The great CJ Nikowski, former big leaguer. He's killing it right now on the Texas Ranger telecast. CJ, this was a lot of fun. It's good hearing your voice. I miss you, buddy. Stay safe. All the best to you and the family. And hopefully we can catch up when there's actually a season to be played. Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice. I mean, it was really a tough one for us. With interleague play, you only go to see the city every 6 years, right? So as the Rangers, we only come to see the Mets once every 6 years. It was supposed to be this year. So I would have got two trips into New York, both the Yankees. And the Mets was going to call all those games, but didn't happen, man. Great to hear your voice as well, and best to you and your audience.
There you have it. Good stuff. CJ, take care, all right, my friend?
All right, you too, brother.
There you have it. That's CJ Nikowski.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.